Thank you very much, Emiko. And let's begin, if you like, as usual, with about 30 minutes of guided meditation and then a 5-minute break. And I have prepared a Dharma talk, which is titled Practicing Freedom from Resentment. I'm loving seeing everyone's names and locations in the chat. I noticed that there's one person zooming in from Toronto, Canada, which is where I did part of my original Zen Buddhist training in the early 1980s. And just thrilled to see all of you. If we'd like, let's start with some practice. The theme that I'm going to be speaking on today is actually about seeing the goal of our practice as happiness. And I'm going to read a quote, which I'll also include in the Dharma talk, but just to get the meditation rolling and just asking you and us to consider individually and collectively. How might we claim and find some happiness for ourselves today? Maybe a little and maybe a lot. This is from Bhante Gunaratna, the Sri Lankan monk who's been in the United States for a very long time. And his book, 8 Mindful Steps to Happiness, Walking the Buddha's Path. Happiness is right there when you make the effort to achieve it. Remember your goal and do not abandon your efforts until you become totally happy. Say to yourself, and this is a quote from the ancient Buddhist text, very early text as I understand it, called the Dhammapada, translated by Bhikkhu Buddharakhita. So Gunaratna says, say to yourself, and this is a quote, happy indeed we live, friendly amidst the hateful, amidst hostile men, we could say amidst hostile people, we dwell free from hatred. I think that's an interesting challenge and a question for us as Black Indigenous people of color. It's not something that we need to regard as an order or something ridiculous like that, because, in fact, how do we live happily? How do we remain friendly amidst the hateful? In my original tradition, which is Zen Buddhism, we would call that a koan. A meditation question to consider. And a perfectly good answer is I do not know. Okay, so let's start. Maybe just letting that gently flow over us in a way. By finding a position that is going in the direction of being stable, as comfortable as possible without inviting sleepiness. If we're really exhausted and fall asleep, as is said these days, rest is resistance. Just take a rest. And if possible, finding a position either seated, lying down, or semi-reclining. Whatever works best for our body. Many of us have chronic pain, chronic illness. It might work better for us to meditate lying down or in a semi-reclining chair, or seated upright on a chair, a couch, or perhaps on the floor on meditation mats. and cushions. And with our theme, perhaps taking a moment and asking ourselves, what would make my body a little bit happier? In other words, how can I bring a little more physical ease into my posture? We might want to breathe out, let our shoulders drop. Roll our heads just a little bit, or move them easily from side to side. And if this works for us, as we breathe in, becoming aware of tension in the body mind, as we breathe out, releasing. Maybe a little, and maybe more. Grounding, centering, allowing the eyes to gently close, or keeping them open with a soft, unfocused gaze. And letting the hands rest wherever is most comfortable. If possible, we're inviting an attitude toward ourselves of kindness, compassion, and gentle curiosity. What is my experience in the present moment? And we can become gently aware of information we're getting, basically, excuse me, from our perceptions. In other words, are we experiencing warmth, coolness? These are physical perceptions, warmth, coolness, contact, pressure, tingling, heaviness, lightness, movement, stillness. This is a kind of radical simplicity. We're giving ourselves the gift of simplicity, just noticing physical sensations that are comfortable enough to notice, or neutral. We might notice sounds if we're hearing people. And as long as we're safe enough in our place of practice, simply allow the sounds to come and go. Noticing if we're able to hear sounds that hearing is occurring. And also most likely experiencing that thinking is happening and emotions may be arising. This is the human experience. And as long as we can take care of ourselves, it's all natural, and we can let it flow by. Or notice where we get stuck if many stories start to arise. By knowing ourselves more fully as people of color, we claim agency and power for ourselves. What we're doing now is mindfulness meditation, also known as insight or vipassana meditation. There are many forms of meditation, and some of them are very, very different from this. In mindfulness meditation, we notice and observe our experience in a radically simple way in the present moment. And we try to do this without judgment, or if we're judging, we notice we're judging. And this is a way of helping us to clear some space for ourselves. Vipassana means to see clearly, or to perceive accurately. What sensations are you feeling right now? In your feet, your hands, your back, your ears. And if awareness of physical sensations of the breath works for you, it doesn't work for everyone, in which case, ignore this. If it does work for you, as we breathe in and breathe out in a natural fashion, relaxing on the out breath, releasing tension, aware as we're breathing in, aware as we're breathing out, where we experience it in the body. Usually, we're noticing some form of movement. If it's in the chest, the abdomen rising as we breathe in, gently falling as we breathe out. We might also think of it as expanding, contracting. Or perhaps noticing a cool sensation if we breathe in through the nostrils, a different sensation as we breathe out through the nostrils. We may be breathing through our mouth, that's a different sensation. There's no right or wrong, again, as long as we're basically safe. And so we're asking ourselves with curiosity and kindness, what am I experiencing right now? What's my body telling me? And in the last few minutes of this period of meditation practice, just switching for a few minutes, segueing into the meditation on loving kindness, also known as the meditation on goodwill, or metta, M-E-T-T-A. So in line with our theme of this morning, if you like, wish yourself happiness. Using these words or any others, may I be safe and protected from harm, inner and outer. May I be safe and protected from all harm, physical harm and mental harm. May I be as strong and healthy as possible. If I'm ill, if I'm in pain, I wish myself moments of well-being. A sip of our favorite warm tea, perhaps a feeling of sunlight on our cheek. The warm presence of an animal companion. A card from a friend. Something that brings us that feeling of well-being, of being cared for. May I be peaceful. May I be happy. May I be truly happy. And may I live with joy. And may I live with ease. May I be happy. And please notice, this is not performative in any way. These are well wishes. This is goodwill. This is not a magical formula. If we feel miserable, very understandable. Anxious, sad, very understandable. We can still, if we like, wish ourselves happiness, peace, safety, protection. Joy and ease. And if that doesn't seem possible, perhaps it's possible to extend goodwill, and it may be possible to extend goodwill and loving kindness and peace to other living beings. May all beings without exception be safe, peaceful, happy. May they be joyful and may they know ease. May all living beings be happy. And together, may we attain our goal. I'll invite the bell of mindfulness three times, and then we'll have a break for 5 minutes. Thank you, Sangha. Beautiful practice. And we'll now have a break for 5 minutes, coming back at 9:47 a.m. Pacific time. See you then. Welcome back from the break. And I'll again invite the bell of mindfulness three times. You might have noticed I changed my clothes because I was freezing. It's really cold here in Oakland. Hopefully this will help. Again, thank you, Sangha. So wonderful to be here this Sunday morning with you. And I see there are now 31 of us together on this Zoom from many different parts of the United States, it looks like, and also Canada. Again, you're always invited to put your name and your location so that we get some sense of, where we're located, what time zone we're in, and begin to develop and strengthen the ties of affinity that bring us together in this particular spiritual community. I'll begin the Dharma talk by quoting a quote that came to me by my very close friend and colleague, Melvin Escobar, who, like me, is one of the core teachers of East Bay Meditation Center. And Melvin quoted a friend from who's doing 12-step work, which has a lot of crossover with Dharma wisdom. And this quote says this: expectations are premeditated resentments. Expectations are premeditated resentments. And of course, my brain immediately said, we have to have expectations. It's ridiculous. There are reasonable expectations. And of course, I believe there are. Hi from Detroit, Michigan. Once again, my original training was in Ann Arbor, Michigan, actually. So great to see you. My brain immediately said, well, that's ridiculous. We have to, there are reasonable expectations of how we need and want to be treated with respect, with equity, with equality, with kindness, with compassion, expectations of ourselves and how we wish to treat others, and just many, many different expectations. However, now going into what the quote is actually pointing to, there are also expectations that I might be holding that simply are my hopes for a situation that I have very little control over and that probably are not going to be met. This is actually very common with close familial relationships, which tend to be quite complicated, and in some cases, hopes and expectations for feelings of connection and forms of closeness with members of our immediate or more extended families that are simply unlikely to be met and which cause a great deal of understandable suffering for ourselves and others. So expectations are premeditated resentments. And that got me to thinking about resentment and how we can practice with it, or how I can practice with it. And I'd like to share a little something of that with you, and we will have time for community dialogue and Q&A. Since this is being recorded, let me take a move back and say that today is the 26th of March in the year 2023. My name is Mushim. That's a Korean Zen Buddhist name that I received in Toronto, Canada, in May of 1983, when I received the Bodhisattva vows and precepts. from my original teacher, who was a Korean Zen monk. I myself am third generation Japanese American. My family name is Ikeda. And I'm, for many years, I don't know, maybe what, 31 years, almost 32 years, I have been living on the occupied land of the Confederated Villages of the Lishan Ohlone, otherwise known as Oakland, California, in the United States. And one of the reasons I know it's called the Confederated Villages of the Lishan Ohlone is because I pay my Shumi land tax. Shumi means gratitude, to my local indigenous organization, which is very wonderful, I think, and they're called Sagoriate. You maybe you've already done this wherever you are. I really invite you to find a similar organization to Sagoriate. Sagoriate is led by women, and their motto is rematriate the land. That's our goal. Let's rematriate the land. And I always look forward to their emails, to learning from them, and to supporting them as much as I can. There's a great deal of talk these days in activist circles how it's really helpful to go beyond what's been called the land acknowledgement and put some real support behind it in terms of our volunteer efforts, money that we can give, and we can engage with the educational work that these groups are doing so that we can just keep learning more and more. All right, back to resentment. We're now in the, we've done 3 years, folks, of the COVID-19 pandemic. It's been a global pandemic, and it's had impact at every level, personal, interpersonal, social, national, international, global. And I'd like to share with you a true story. So in mid-March of 2020, when we were 2 days out from the COVID-19 pandemic shelter in place order in California. So that's where there was a statewide order given to stay inside as much as possible, to shelter in place. Well, we figured out what the heck was going on and what we could begin to do. As most of you may remember or know, there were people, this was apparently something limited to the United States, which I'm not at all proud of, yet it happened. There was massive hoarding of toilet paper going on, as well as meat and toilet paper. People were stockpiling as much meat and toilet paper as possible to be able to get through the rough time. And of course, there was widespread pain, anxiety, confusion, and just panic, really. And in the midst of all of this chaos, I experienced, having been a Buddhist practitioner and a former monastic too, since 1982, I had a very rare experience for me. I had a genuine religious experience. And this was an experience in which everything stopped. I was here in my apartment in Oakland, and I heard a huge inner voice. I mean, it was just like in the movies, you know, when you hear God talking. And so this huge inner voice said, very firmly too, number one, you do not know how bad this will get. Number two, you do not know when this will end. And therefore, number three, you need to forgive everyone for everything proactively for everything that's about to happen, and who knows what that will be. You need to forgive everyone, including yourself, this voice said, right now. And I was so impressed that I said, okay, I will. And it has actually helped me a great deal in the past 3 years, and no doubt going forward. It's also true, I venture to guess, that in the United States, and where you are if you're in another country, that we as Black, Indigenous, people of color, multiracial folks, that we're pretty exhausted. I know that I am. I am tired. I mean, time marches on. I turned 69 this year. That's part of it. And there's also a mental and an emotional exhaustion from the political, the mental health, the social, the familial tensions that have arisen and are playing themselves out, even as we're gathering here today in community. And when I reflect upon that experience that I had in March of 2020, again, having come into Buddhism through the doorway of Zen Buddhism, in which questions are, investigative questions, meditative questions are greatly prized as a way of making progress in our spiritual practice, I did notice that this voice did not say it is going to get ultimately bad and it's never going to end. These were open statements that said, you do not know, Mushum, how bad this will get, which leaves room for maybe it actually won't be that bad, or it could be sort of the ultimate bad thing you can think of and everything in between. But that quality of opening ourselves to not knowing, being okay enough with uncertainty, and therefore that uncertainty not numbing us, but promoting a sense of alertness. Okay, I don't know. How can I get more information that will be helpful to me and my community, my family? The voice also said, you don't know when this will end. And of course, the negative filtering that the human brain can do immediately thought, added on, well, it might never end. And considering my age, what a way to go out. This is not what I planned for the last years of my life. However, that's not what the voice said. The voice said, you actually just don't know when it will end. And it hasn't ended. However, at least where I am, things are greatly improved, and I'm gradually beginning to feel more comfortable having some meals inside restaurants, certainly outside. It's California, so the weather's pretty good. And just having a easing up of the wearing of masks and the many restrictions of the past 3 years. And once again, still not completely over if we consider the community health. In other words, in a state of transition. So I don't know about you, but I am exhausted. And as a community, as a set of communities self-identified as BIPOC, I think it's fair to say that we're continuing to carry heavy loads of grief, of well-justified anger, fear, anxiety, despair, perhaps cynicism, resentment. We're carrying heavy and, as always, disproportionate loads. the weight is not distributed equally in our societies due to structural oppressions. There has been a lot, and will continue to be a lot, on the topic of anger in, this is Dharma-based or Buddhism-based. And I myself feel that anger is not always a bad thing at all. It's a kind of energy, and that energy can be pure energy that is transformed into resistance to oppression, that is transformed into questioning, how can we be happier under the current situation? How can we be healthier? What can we do to help ourselves? What can we do to help others? What can we do for the environment? Because getting angry is a natural response. It is a natural response to injustice, to unfairness, and to unequal treatment. Those of us, I'm a parent, my adult child lives with me, and those of us who are parents, guardians, and who live with young and work with young children probably know that something that makes kids the most angry is unfairness and unequal treatment. And why not? It is infuriating. And yet, and also, so both and, there is that sometimes pesky quote from the Buddhist suttas or sutras, what are known as the ancient discourses that are said to come from the historical teacher called the Buddha, Shakyamuni in India, 2,500, 2,600 years ago. My understanding is that current Buddhist scholars do debate whether such a person, one person, did exist. There is that. And what we do know is that there is a body of teachings and practices that do follow certain principles, are based in foundation teachings, and that do come from that part of the world, Nepal and India, over several thousand years. And that have both continuity as well as diversity and a great deal of depth. Thus, as is said, it is said, and I'll ask Emiko to please screen share the quotation from the Sri Lankan monk Bhante H. Gunaratna, who is, I think he's most well known for Mindfulness in Plain English, which is a book I particularly recommend. It's a classic bestseller translated into many different languages. And this book is Eight Mindful Steps to Happiness, Walking the Buddha's Path. It was published in 2001, and it is his explication of what's called the Eightfold Noble Path, or which is one of the foundation teachings, the very, very foundation teachings, which tend to unify Buddhists globally. And as much as there is diversity and variety, as within any global faith tradition, there are also, of course, teachings that that unify us as well. So you'll notice it says eight mindful steps, bringing in mindfulness. We might say eight mindful movements toward happiness. And there's a picture of a very happy or self-satisfied or smug cat. I'm a big fan of cats. The quote says, "Happiness is right there when you make the effort to achieve it." I'm going to change it to we. Happiness is right there, or perhaps can be right there, when we make the effort to achieve it. Let us remember our goal and do not abandon our efforts until we become totally happy. Say to ourselves, and this is again a quote from the Dhammapada, a very ancient Buddhist text, translated into English by Bhikkhu Buddharakhita. So we can say to ourselves, quote, happy indeed we live. We live happily, friendly. We live in the spirit of friendship amidst the hateful. Amidst or among hostile people, we dwell free from hatred. And I remember reading this originally in a slightly different translation that said something like, we live happily. We live happily amongst those who hate. Amongst those who are hostile to us, here we are dwelling free from hatred. Free from hatred. And I thought, that sounds absurd. How can that even be possible? It's not logical. It does not make sense. And it just sounds like some kind of pie in the sky ridiculousness. However, and that's been true of many things in my Buddhist training over the years, that when I originally heard some teachings, I thought, that's completely wrong, or that's really, really stupid. 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, 30 years out, more and more meaningful to me. So something to consider. Sometimes seeds are being planted, judgments arise, and then at some time later, that insight begins to make more and more sense. Good to know. Thank you for sharing that, Emiko. And if we could please stop the screen share. It's a little PDF that I made, and it is in the resources section for the Spirit Rock BIPOC Voices. So that crucial question for me, it is a crucial question. The Vietnamese Zen master who passed recently, Thich Nhat Hanh, had famously said, and I figure he should know, having been through the war in Vietnam and having to leave Vietnam, he went into exile as a refugee. He settled in France for many years and was able to return to Vietnam in order to die in the original temple where he had trained as a young monk. Thich Nhat Hanh said, suffering is not enough. Suffering is not enough. If we can just lightly consider that, yes, undoubtedly, we suffer and we suffer deeply. The litany is endless, actually. Can we also find ways to be happy? Can we find ways to rest? Can we find ways to find more joy and find more ease? In my opinion, it's really important to consider and perhaps to keep in mind, if it works for us, that processes like spiritual forgiveness and letting go of resentment. So remember, I had said that in my opinion, anger is a form of energy. It can feel really energizing. Explosive anger and rage can be extremely energizing and therefore useful. At the same time, Rage and anger can be like quick, hot explosions, and that can be destructive and dangerous, as undoubtedly we know, and certainly I do. Again, I'm a parent. I have lost my temper numerous times and said things and done things that I later deeply regret and have apologized for because I just could not contain my anger. And I could see immediately the destructive effect on my child. As an activist working in community, I also know that anger is a form of resistance, and then we can transform that through community action and strategic actions. Angry actions are very rarely strategic. They're often impulsive. Strategic actions mean they're planned in community. We know what result we want, and we're going to go for it and see if the campaign, the initiative can be won. I've had the initial training in Kingian nonviolence years ago at East Bay Meditation Center from Kazuhaga, who's since become very well known for nonviolence training. And that training, again, based on the work of Martin Luther King Jr., Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., our trainer said, we are talking about aggressive nonviolence. And there were peace-loving people there who said, well, we don't like the word aggressive. Maybe we can change it to like assertive or reel back on that. And the trainers were like, hell no. If actually the forces we're up against are so huge, Dr. King said, and Dr. King meant aggressive nonviolence. So that's something to really think about. How can we be effective? We want to have that spirit, if we do, of love, of kindness, of being strategic, of being thoughtful. And we also want to achieve our goals, and that can take aggressive action, nonviolently. So that's just a few words on anger. And again, it's a very huge subject. I think that resentment and hatred fall into the category of what in the Dharma are sometimes called harbored anger. And that's where we take in anger and we provide a safe harbor for it and we let it grow. I said that anger can be like a quick, hot explosion. Resentment can be a low, slow burn that burns up other people and ourselves, as I know from experience. So we can consider how anger, hatred, resentment actually serve us and maybe even be experienced as fun. And also using our mindfulness, that non-judgmental awareness, is this creating damage is to myself and others? And if so, what am I willing to let go of? The great Thai meditation teacher, mindfulness meditation teacher, Ajahn Chah, very famously said, if we let go a little, we're going to get a little bit of peace. Yay. If we let go a lot, we'll get a lot of peace. If we let go completely, we will have complete peace. And that, of course, opens the question, what are we letting go of? What's weighing us down? What's weighing me down today? How can I go towards even a little bit or maybe a lot more happiness? Not in spite of, along with, amongst, beside, within the many unhappiness-producing factors of everything that is happening today. We do have the power to create change. We do. And that's part of the Buddhist teaching of impermanence. It doesn't always mean impermanence in an undesirable direction. It can also mean impermanence towards much better conditions or slightly better conditions for ourselves and our people. Impermanence can be a form of our power. I wanted to mention that the People of Color work at Spirit Rock Meditation Center was started many years ago, and one of the key movers and shakers was Dr. Marlene Jones, who was one of my friends, and I'm going to ask Emiko to please put into the chat a link to a Lion's Roar article that appeared online and also in their hard copy magazine, Lion's Roar Magazine, on 6 Remarkable Black Buddhists. That came out fairly recently this month. And Dr. Marlene Jones is included in the 6 Remarkable Buddhists. And as I was preparing this talk, I remembered driving over a long time ago to Sausalito. And Marlene and I sat outside and had breakfast or lunch at a really nice outdoor cafe. And I remember her saying to me, "You know, Mushum, something that my practice has given me is the ability, when happiness comes along, to savor the moment." And she said, "I was never taught this in any of the meditation retreats I went to. This came to me, and so I really want to share it with others." We have the ability to savor, to stop. You know how you savor something that's good? You just slow down and think, "Oh, this is so yummy. I'm just going to sort of freeze time a little bit and just enjoy every last drop of it." That's what Marlene said to me. Let us savor the moments. And that will strengthen us. That will strengthen our communities. And I'll end the talk also with a reference to the title of this talk, which is Practicing Freedom from Resentment. How do we let go of resentment if it is old grudges? They might not even be that old. They might have continued into the present. In order to claim more happiness for ourselves, more joy, more health, more energy. And this is a true story of when my mother died in December of 97, after 5 years of fiercely battling cancer. And when my child, who was around 8 years old at the time and attended Oakland Public Schools, came home from school, she had been sick for a long time. I said to him, "I have some news for you. Grandma has died." And I said to him, she was in so much pain that all I can think of is the famous quote from Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., which I think is written on his tombstone, that says, "Free at last, free at last. Thank God Almighty, I'm free at last," or "we're free at last." And this child, being Buddhist, immediately replied, "We are already free, and we don't want to be freed from freedom." So some things we don't want to let go of. And one of those is freedom, our power to create positive change and to claim happiness for ourselves here and now.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.